Hello, everyone. This is Margie Milam, and welcome to the workshop. This is the latest in the series of teleconferences for the expert working group on GTLD directory services that were produced to highlight the work of the group. The aim for the seminar is to be an interactive discussion with the EWG, which will focus on identifying potential risks and benefits that might result if ICANN were to replace WHOIS with a next-generation system as suggested by the expert working group. During this interactive workshop, we will gather input on the risks and benefits that might result if ICANN were to replace WHOIS from anyone that might be impacted by the RDS. And we'll also provide you a forum to do a deep dive interaction with the members of the expert working group on the proposed RDS features. Before we begin, I'll give you a few housekeeping tips. The webinar is being recorded, so if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. The session is being streamed via audio via Adobe Connect Room, but if you intend to voice comments or raise questions during the question and answer period, please join the Adigo Bridge. You won't be able to speak through the Adobe Connect Room. If you join the Adigo Bridge, please remember to mute your phone if you are not speaking to avoid the echo. You can do so by pressing *6, and then you can unmute by pressing *7. If you want to make any comments, we invite you to raise your hand in the Adobe Connect Room to be added to the queue. And if you're not actually on the phone bridge, you can use the chat function to insert questions and comments. And with that, I'd like to introduce Jean-François Baril, the facilitator of the Expert Working Group.
Thank you very much, Margie, and a very warm welcome to the EWG Next Generation GTLD RDS April workshop webinar, exploring the replacement for WHOIS, and even more important, how it will impact us. Please also note that a similar webinar has been held yesterday at 7 p.m. UTC. So my name is Jean-François Baril, EWG facilitator, along with a few of my colleagues, Fabrizio, Michele, Stephanie, Landre, Carlton, and Margie will be the next speakers. As always, these moments of having direct dialogue with the community are very, very precious for us, especially as we approach our final phase of our work. So following the Singapore EWG workshop, we wanted everyone to have a chance to get even more familiar and comment on our EWG work. As we said in Singapore, we are currently reviewing and integrating all comments based on the different consultations with the ICANN community. And very, very special thank you to all of you who have responded to these different requests for bringing your input. So we want to go even further today and especially focusing on RDS risks and benefits. So for the agenda, we will propose the following. Fabrizio Vera will refresh our memory on what are the key registration directory services features based on the latest update. Then we will have the opportunity to comment and input during 30 minutes Q&A moderated by Michele Nellon. Then Stephanie Perrin will introduce the survey we are proposing to the community on risk and benefits on the new RDS. We will get after that into more specifics. The first specifics are about technical risk and benefits with Michele. Then we'll have legal and financial issues, which will be covered by Fabrizio. Landre Ayawi will tell us about operational risk and benefits. Security and privacy will be covered by Carlton Samuels. Then Fabrizio will come back to explain how to efficiently fill the survey such a way you can input on how to reduce risk and, of course, maximize benefits. Margie will then wrap up the session and present the next steps. But once again, I would like to strongly emphasize and underline that we are all actively working for better RDS to support the overall global internet community needs for domain name, registration data, with significant improvements on privacy, accuracy, and accountability. Starting from clean slate approach for WIS replacement, redefining the purpose and provision of GTLD registration data, and assessing needs for the next generation RDS. So without further ado, I would like now to pass the microphone to Fabrizio, who will tell us about the key RDS features.
Thank you, Jean-Francois, and welcome everybody. So we're on the next slide here, you could switch over. So what is the RDS? The RDS is a system that we're proposing by which someone can go online and find out, as example here, who owns a certain domain name. The example is company.com, and as you can see in the graphic, to find that out, you would do a query. It would ping through the RDS, and depending on the model that you go through, either pull the data directly from the RDS or ping out to the, say, the registries who hold the data. What would be returned? You'd get public, verified, accurate information about registrants and contacts. For authorized users, you would also have accessibility to some gated information. We'll speak more about gated and public later. And to the left here, you see a little diagram that talks about the types of information that you would see. For public access, you would get company.com, possibly the organization name, and an email address for contactability. And the gray here, you see, we talk about authorized access to gated information. You might find actually the street address, city, state, postal, and phone number, all of which, again, would be verified. Next slide, please. So some of the key features of the proposed RDS, touched on a bit in the prior slide, but we need to remember that we're talking about a purpose-driven access, which is much different than we have today, meaning that someone who goes into access information would have to actually declare what their purpose is. We're talking about having information that would be validated, both the public and especially that is gated. We'd have systems for managed contacts so that you'd be able to manage your contacts across the entire system in one shot. Some of the data elements, as we mentioned, would be public, such as an email address for contactability. Someone chose, they could have more information outside of the gate. But gated data would be that we normally see today as public addresses, phone numbers, all of which would be accessible to accredited users who identified themselves, they stated a purpose, and agreed to accountability. Recall that one of the things that that's paramount and runs across our entire work is accountability, both accountability for those who enter the system as registrants, but something new here, which would be accountability for those who access data. And so you see we'd want people who access data to agree to accountability. And something that's available in our proposed model here would be that you'd be able to have privacy that's consistent jurisdictionally across by the data subject. So we'd be able to do good policies around data privacy. By implementing the system, we would propose that you'd have, as you can see, enhanced privacy, but also maximum privacy options. If you read the report, we have anonymous credentialing available as one of the options. What's good about the system, one of the benefits that we're proposing, is that it's a centralized web portal that implements RDAP query access, which is Registration Data Access Protocol, the latest and greatest. And what this would allow is that instead of having to go registry by registry or registrar by registrar to access who is data, you'd be able to do a one-stop shop through a centralized portal. this next bullet point about aggregated and federated, I think ties in well with the centralized portal, which is to remember that we haven't settled specifically on whether the data would be aggregated through the centralized portal or just that the centralized portal will allow you centralized search through a federated storage, meaning that the data, for example, would sit at all the various registries and a centralized portal would just allow you ease of search, not actual aggregation of data. So with this, I will switch over to Michele to cover question and comment period about the RDS. Michele?
Thank you, Fabrizio. And apologies to the Europeans. I'm afraid the Americans are all half asleep. So for those of you who've been up for several hours, good afternoon. At this juncture, I think the phone lines should be open. So if anybody wants to ask questions via the phone, and I know there are two people who are on the phone who are not on Adobe, feel free to let us know. If anybody on the Adobe has any comments or has any questions, I think most of you know how to raise your hands virtually and ask. So I'm throwing it open. Any questions from anybody? Wow. We're giving you a golden opportunity here to grill us on all the work that we've done so far. And I'm not hearing, and nobody wants to ask us any questions. Okay, so Steve Metalitz has put in the chat, how does the centralized portal differ from what ICANN is already making available in beta? Who'd like to answer that one? I'll give it over. Fabrizio, go for it.
Yeah, so one thing that pops out to me, Steve, is that I think that the centralized portal that ICANN's developing today is just that and has nothing else layered on top of it, whereas the centralized function of the RDS is just one of the functions that we're proposing built into the RDS would also be certain verifications, et cetera, that would sit at the RDS level. So the centralization is akin to what ICANN's building, but it's only one of the multiple facets built into the RDS. Does that help answer it?
Thank you, Fabrizio. I'll just add to that as well, Michele, for the transcript. The centralized system that ICANN is currently beta testing at the moment doesn't have any level of accountability. A lot of the kind of logging and other things that we are proposing isn't catered for. So, you know, it's not covering the same kind of thing. I mean, what ICANN has basically produced is just a Whois lookup tool. Okay, the next question is from Volker Greimer, and his question is, what would be considered abuse causing removal of access rights? Carlton, I think I'll throw that one to you. Or maybe Carlton's on mute. Okay, Carlton's obviously on mute. I'll try to address that.
This is Carlton.
Okay, Carlton, would you like to answer that one?
Yes, so the question was, what would be considered abuse?
Causing removal of access rights.
For the removal of access rights, yes. Bear in mind that we are proposing that there's going to be two kinds of access. There's one where it's public access. Everybody has access to a very defined set of data items. And I would suspect netiquette would probably not come into play there. But then there is a gated access, again, because we are assuming that the community will go along with the purpose, that access to elements will be purposeful. And so if you were to care purpose for access, then it would be found to be not factual, then maybe that is abuse and you could be some sanction might apply. So there's a question of abuse of purpose. Then the other one may be that you are caught defacing or probably trying to create lists that would breach anybody's rights, privacy rights, for example. That might those might be reasons for getting your access restricted.
Nikali?
This
is Larry. Yes, I just like to give an example of an abuse. I think something like bulk harvesting would constitute an abuse. And I think this kind of act is not allowed, and it should be a reason to cause removal from of access rights.
Thank you, Lanray. And just another thing as well is with what we've been proposing, you know, you're going to have rate limits. The idea being that there would be service level agreements that also be, for argument's sake, that you're granted a higher level of access to, let's say, potentially more sensitive data, you're not just going to walk up and get that. You're going to probably have to agree to something. So if you are seen to abuse that, let's say abuse could be trying to reverse engineer the database. Abuse could be saying that you are using it for a what we would consider to be a valid reason, and let's say using it to mine data in order to spam people. A couple of questions here in the Adobe chat from Theo Gertz. Question: how is privacy being handled, and does RDS display all the registrant info? I'm going to hand over to Fabrizio in just one second, but just to let you know, Theo, that one of the principles we've been putting in every single area possible is that privacy, respect for privacy and respect for law has to be taken into consideration at all steps. It shouldn't be an afterthought. It shouldn't be something that is kind of bolted on at the end and in a ham-fisted sort of manner. So I'll pass over to Fabrizio. Fabrizio, go ahead.
Thank you, Michele. So, Theo, at the simplest level, something that would change from today would be that everything aside from a contact email address and possibly the person's name or company would be behind a gate. So without credentialing and having appropriate access level and purpose, the registrant's information as seen today, address, phone number, things of that nature wouldn't even be shown. Once someone's credentialed, say law enforcement or an IP owner, they get their token, they get behind the gate to access the information. What we're discussing today is a way to implement basically localized privacy law filters per se. So somebody from the U.S. trying to access data on a data subject from Europe, the system should recognize several levels, both what the level of accreditation was for the person accessing from the United States, then also where the subject matter is and what laws would pertain to that person, and then also where the data sits, because it may not be where the data subject is. And then all behind this, obviously, you would also have what the data subject agreed to. So we're definitely, as Michele said, trying to account for the utmost in privacy and afford you what you as a data subject are afforded under your jurisdiction.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Next question we have is from Volker Greimann. In case of abuse, are you proposing permanent bans or time limitations? I'll answer that. Essentially, Volker, at this juncture, we're proposing that, you know, that if you, if you're given access for a particular at a particular level for particular purposes, then you need to respect that. If you don't respect that, there has to be some level of sanction. It's not up to us to decide exactly on what that would involve. So it could be permanent abuse. It could be a permanent ban. It could be a temporary ban. I mean, if you look at the way, for example, ICANN compliance has, you know, processes for dealing with reports of issues involving registrars and registries. You know, you're not going to de-accredit a registrar for one single complaint. It's the same as, I suppose, a lot of things where, you know, depending on what it is. So there could be lots of different ways of handling it, and, you know, that will be a matter for policy to decide. Does anybody want to add anything to that from the EWG? I'll take that as a no. Okay, moving on. Next question is from Steve Metalitz. How would verification validation of registrant contact data be improved over what is provided in the 2013 RAA?
Nikali, can I respond to that?
Please, work away.
Yes, I think in our proposal, a major introduction is the availability of validators, which is not as of 2013 RAA. There are going to be validators who are going to validate all the data elements that are submitted. All the three levels of validation may take place as syntactic, operational, and identity validation. I think the important thing here is that there are going to be designated entities that are going to carry out validation, and I don't think this is available in the 2013 RAA.
Okay, thank you, Lanre. And just to add to that, I mean, at the moment, Steve, all of these things are just proposals. For example, with respect to the level of validation and verification of registrant contacts, I mean, some of us feel that higher levels of verification and validation should be optional. So for in the case of a big brand, let's say, for argument's sake, say Louis Vuitton, they might wish to have highly validated, highly verified contact information related to their domain names, and they might wish to restrict access to those details. In other words, one of the issues at the moment is that anybody who wants to can put in any contact details that they want for a domain. So in the case of some of the big brands, some abuse would be where people put in contact information without actually having the right to do so. We're exploring different options here. Ultimately, though, all we're doing is coming up with recommendations. They're not going to be binding. The next question, and I'm going to try to pronounce this person's name, and I apologize in advance because I won't get it right. Pitinan Kur Armonpatana. Question, could you elaborate more on how you make sure of verified accurate information, especially in the locations where non-ASCII languages use, like Chinese, Thai, Laos, etc. So you're talking about internationalized domain names data, internationalized registration data. Does anybody want to tackle that?
Yes. I think my understanding of that question is that how is data that are non-ASCII going to be verified? Responding to that, it still goes to the fact that we are going to have validators, and there are going to be validators who operate within that realm, within the realm of non-ASCII languages. So those validators will validate all data that are inputted into the system. So I can't see that as a problem because there are going to be validators around the world, including countries that are that have non-ASCII languages.
Thanks, Lanry. Kitinan, I hope that kind of goes some way towards addressing your query. I mean, one of the things we have discussed is that any replacement for registration directory services has to be UTF-8, has to be capable of handling multiple languages, and should not be US-centric. Calvin Brown is asking, given the alleged human rights abuses by US government, would US law agencies be barred from access? So I'm going to throw that over to Fabrizio.
Okay, can you hear me? Yeah, hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear you perfectly.
Okay, perfect. Sorry. So listen, I think that the system is going to be built so that, or proposed system would be built in such a way that it starts just as we've taken a fresh look at the system itself. I guess everyone would get a fresh start in that the system will be built with proper checks and balances. Again, this is accountability across the board, and what we're hoping to do, I guess, to your question, is make sure that there's accountability for those who enter, and that's for everyone, including U.S. law enforcement and whoever else in the world we believe might abuse the system. The system should be built in such a way that accounts for privacy laws for everybody and creates accountability for those accessing that data. And when those folks are abusing or misusing data, trying to access it for the wrong purposes, et cetera, the system would have the proper check and balance to actually pick up and as we talked about, provide some sort of sanction for that abuse. So I guess the quick answer to your question is no, they wouldn't be blocked out as a start out, but they would, and so would any others if they abused the system. And this is a great opportunity. I'm glad you asked the question. I mean, this whole process is a great opportunity as a community to discuss what abuses are, because as McKaylee put out, you know, this is a proposal, hopefully a well-informed proposal, but a proposal that the community can then take and build upon. And so this is one of the big worries. Definitely the survey's for you, and I think that you should fill out the questions so that this can get highlighted. And one quick add-on, McKaylee, if you don't mind, one of the prior questions was about how you would go around validating user information. Just so you guys know, the extensive work that we've done on this subject matter, in particular for those countries that the, you know, the postal addressing system isn't the same as many other countries, or, you know, easy to check and verify, et cetera. We've gone as far as to have sessions with the UPU about ways to actually check and validate addresses. We've talked to actually many companies who go through and do these checks to verify addresses. So it's not something we just said, hey, we want to verify addresses and didn't do any background homework. Hopefully that helps answer both questions.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Next question is from Theo Gertz. Question, does the RDS setup eliminate the escrow requirement of registrant data? Who shall I pick on for this one? I'll pick on Carlton.
Okay. Are you hearing me? This is Carlton.
We hear you beautifully.
Okay. This is Carlton. You're hearing me. Hello?
Okay, Carlton, please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. This is Carlton. The proposal in no way reduces the RA 2013 requirement for escrow data. As a matter of fact, what we are proposing here will add another layer of protection for data recovery and so on from disaster. And we are actually, the RDS is just one way of extending the data. Please understand that not all of the data that would be collected would be available on the RDS, not all of the data. It's a very prescribed data set that is for RDS data. Do remember that other pieces of data might be collected that would not be within the purview of the RDS.
Thank you, Carlton. Are there any other questions? And I also see there was just some little bit in the chat there from Pitinan. Sorry, I'm terrible with this name. Just asking about verifying contact data where the address is in English, but let's say the place is in Thailand. And as Fabrizio mentioned, we have met with the UP Universal Postal Union, and we've also been discussing various options of how one could validate and verify contact information with a number of different providers. From what we've been discussing there, and also I think just giving some insight into some of the discussions we've been having in other areas around this, there may not be a perfect solution for every single region in the world, but you know, that's something that would have to be addressed. Are there any further questions? If not, I'm going to hand the presentation back over to Carlton. Okay, I'm going to hand it back over to Carlton.
Thank you,
have the floor.
Thank you, Michele. I will pass it on to Stephanie. Steph, you're on?
Hello? Am I coming through?
Yes, Steph, you're on.
Yes. You're coming across in beautiful stereo or whatever.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, my portion of these slides is basically to introduce you to the risk survey that we have released and that is up online at the, I trust that link is working, at the URL that you will see on the slides if you are watching on Adobe Connect. If not, it's up on the EWG area of the website. The purpose of doing this survey, and a survey is not the ideal way to do a risk assessment. Ideally, in a perfect world, we'd have a couple of days to meet together, have a big group, and thrash out what we think the risks are. That's a better way to think of things that aren't top of mind that you haven't perhaps thought of. But given time constraints and people's time in particular, we have issued this survey to prompt people to try to assess risks that we may not have thought of in the EWG, to think about risks not just for you, your organization, your company, your customers as well. Please have a look at the survey. The findings are going to be used to refine our recommendations and as input to a full risk assessment. We are making a recommendation that there be a full risk assessment of this as it moves forward once we've given our recommendations. So next slide, please. Okay. So basically, I think this is kind of self-explanatory. We're trying to gather broad input from anyone who may be impacted by the RDS, and that does include end users. The analysis will be included in our final report. If I can decides to pursue the model that we have suggested or parts of it, then the formal risk assessment would analyze the identified risks, rank and prioritize them, assess the impacts, and attempt to find mitigations to those risks and assign owners for those mitigations. So that's sort of the cycle in a risk plan. Next slide, please. So some of the things we'd like to talk about today in terms of the risks may seem obvious. They are risks and benefits that the RDS implementation could have on you and your stakeholder groups. So from a technical perspective, changes to the way that you use or provide WHOIS registration data today and what the impacts of those changes might be. Legal or financial, what is it going to cost to do this? What are the cost impacts? We've already spoken about a couple of them. Verification of data costs money. There's no two ways about that. So how do those costs get distributed, and how does the cost-benefit scenario work out there? Legal considerations associated with the registration data. And as was described earlier, we're trying to address these in the engine that provides the data so that there will be some things done automatically. If your customer is in a region that has data protection, then the engine should automatically sort that for you so that you don't release personal information that's protected. Operationally, changes in the speed of access to or availability of registration data. Obviously, there will be changes if you have to be accredited to get access to the WHO, to the Central Registry, the RDS, to get further data. And if it's all the data is not there, and you then have to be directed to a registrar, those are speed issues. Security and privacy, changes that could affect the privacy of domain name registration data, and also, of course, the security. We are hoping there is going to be much greater security and privacy, but we may be overlooking some issues that might create new risks. And we're interested in finding ways to reduce risks and increase benefits. Next slide, please.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. So now we're looking at the technical risks and benefits. And I believe at this juncture, you know, people can ask questions of us. They can participate during this part of the webinar if there's anything that isn't clear to you. So what we're looking at here in terms of the technical risks and benefits, you know, things that might be better for you in our proposal, things that you might view as being worse in some way. So from a registrant perspective, you might think, okay, well, using this system, I'll be able to manage my contact details more easily. From a kind of a potential downside, maybe you might view that anonymous public access, that's kind of going to go away. From a registrar perspective, you can think, well, okay, now I won't need to provide port 43 public WHOIS access. And all we've done on these slides, and it's the same for all the other topics that my colleagues are going to go through, is we've just come up with these potential risks and benefits. We don't know everything, which is why we're asking you all to have a look at this questionnaire, this survey, and let us know what uses of domain registration data, aka WHOIS, you're making, and what you might see as being upsides or downsides to what we've been proposing. So does anybody have any queries or thoughts or input on the technical risks and benefits? No? Okay, I'm going to hand over to, who am I handing over to? Fabrizio, I believe.
Thank you, Michele. So next slide, please. Again, as Michele pointed out, we don't know everything. We don't know what we don't know, right? We've put a lot of work into this over the past year and several months, and I believe that we have some great expertise on the group from all different walks of life and perspectives. But again, the report is and the proposal is at its best or better from feedback from the entire community, and so this is another facet that we should all consider and. You know, legal and financial risks. Again, these are all potentials, and you should really think about this slide and the prior one, I think, as a way to get the juices flowing and spur thought as you go through the survey or prior to going through the survey. So if you look at some of the examples here for some potential legal and financial risk benefit questions, some of the data that's freely available today might decrease. Juxtapose that to the fact that by running through a validated RDS, the data you receive once beyond the gate might actually be more accurate. Some of the questions that we've received in the past are, what's the trade-off for my getting credentialed? Doesn't that cost me time? Well, it does cost you time at the front end, but juxtapose that to the fact that by credentialing yourself and getting to gated data that presumably would improve in quality, you're ultimately reducing your overall costs in investigations, et cetera, which dramatically decreases the inefficiency costs that you're currently having today. So one thing I did want to point out before we move to the next slide or open to questions is in every one of these slides you see at the bottom here other impacts. And that's really, really important throughout the survey, which we'll go into a little bit more detail in the presentation. There's always a section for other impacts because, again, even in creating the survey, we don't know what we don't know. And so your input into what other impacts there may be that we haven't thought about is absolutely critical. And I think will inform the final report in helping weigh out some of the proposals that we have today as between, for example, a federated or aggregated model. So any questions on legal or financial risks and benefits that people would like to ask now? Seeing none, I pass over to Lon Ray to discuss operational risk and benefits.
Thank you, Bob. Next slide. Okay. The proposed RGF comes with some operational benefits. And, of course, there are some certain operational risks which we hope can be mitigated against. Top of that benefit are the ones listed on the right side of your screen. Those are the benefits we think the RGS have operationally. Number one out of that is the fact that you might have more reliable high-speed access to data. With the central portal, that will facilitate faster speed to get that. Also, you get better response time and uniform data sets, which are even more predictable. The real-time authenticated access to get data are also faster than what we have today in the proposed RGS. I'm talking about the review responses from accredited sources. They may be faster than what we have today. On the downside, on the risk side, registration data might be impeded by RDS failure. A number of people believe that the RDS, the way it is presently architectured, is prone to attack, and I believe that is that can be mitigated. Also, access to registration data might be slowed down by RDS bottlenecks. Such bottlenecks include the need for accreditation. Those are some of the risks. Access to gated data might also be delayed from slow accreditation. And data might not be synchronized with recent updates, since a cache of the data has been put in the RDS for the case of aggregated model. It may not necessarily have
Okay, Lan Ray's lost his phone connection, so I'll talk for him. If anybody has any input on this, you know, feel free to let us know. If you don't have anything to say at the moment, that's quite okay. So I'm going to hand over to Carlton, who's going to look at the security and privacy risks and benefits. Carlton, over to you.
Michaelis, before we go on, Steve Metallis had a question, actually.
On the board here.
Sorry. Okay, so does anything in the RDS proposal address speed of a reveal by accredited proxies having a hard time understanding this potential benefit? So does anybody want to address that question?
I'm happy to try.
Go for it.
So Steve, obviously a lot of this depends on what happens in the privacy proxy accreditation discussion that's kind of running concurrent with this, and we're actually being very sensitive. It's one of the questions we received in Singapore and prior to Singapore was, you know, are you guys being redundant or overstepping or reducing value in some of the ongoing work from others? So we're trying very hard not to do that. But some of the ways that this system would force basically more accountability again by registrants. And so to the extent that people use privacy and proxy, they would have to come from accredited privacy and proxies. It would have to be called out that it was actually a privacy and proxy, and things of that nature. So it would be a lot more clear than today, where you're not entirely sure what you're getting, what the stated rules are, and even if it is a privacy proxy or someone who's just pretending to be a privacy proxy, the system would force more clarity on that. We're proposing privacy proxy escalation process in the status update. So, things of that nature. Things will become a little bit more clear, a little bit more systematic, and force the implementation of or running through of the rules that come out of the privacy proxy accreditation. So all of that said, it would be easier for you to identify a privacy proxy that you're dealing with, and then hopefully easier for you to implement whatever the escalation process actually is, which then would hopefully give you a faster reveal. Hopefully that answered the question.
Okay, thanks, Fabrizio. I think Carlton was doing the next slide, weren't you, Carlton?
Yes, thank you, Michele. So this is Carlton. This area, security and privacy risks and benefits, this area has been one of an extensive conversations in EWG, and we're trying very hard to grapple with this issue of privacy and security. The privacy one has been ongoing and been a source of great contention all around. Remember, our issue is that we want as much information as possible so that the recommendations are sturdy and rock-ribbed. We have data to support the recommendations. So we have to think about how the RDS could change in effect the privacy of domain name registration. Again, look, if you look at the slide, we have risks and bad things, worry on the left-hand side, and we have benefits, good things on the right-hand side. These are just some of the ones that we thought about. We think we know some things. We know we don't know some things. And this is where you... if you execute the survey, you would be very helpful indeed in having us fill out what we don't know and validate what we think we know. So even if you think you have a risk or a worry or a bad thing and no benefits or good things, we want to hear from you. We want people to fill out the survey. If you think your risk, your worry is an outlier, that is unique to you, it's even more important for you to put it down. Perhaps we haven't thought of it. But all in all, what we're asking for is a recognition that the EWG understands that their privacy concerns and security concerns, we want to make rock-ribbed recommendations. We don't have all of the data. We want to validate our thinking, and so we are crowdsourcing all of the information that could be applied in these domains. It's for you to help us get a better product out and tell us what you know. Just to, again, think of one thing. One of the things that we've always been grappling with is the attack security and the vulnerability of any data store to attack. And sure, there are mitigating processes that we can apply to any data store online to reduce the likelihood of attack. If you have some new ones, some new exploits that you want to tell us about, this is a place for you to at least give up a heads up on what is possible. So we are very, very, very keen to hear from you, especially with the business of the privacy risks, because this is probably the first time, but we are trying very, very hard to grapple with it and come out on a balanced approach to privacy and security. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlton. Just at this juncture here, I see there's a couple of, a question there from Steve Metlitz, and this is more to do with the structure of the questionnaire. So I'm going to actually ask Lisa to deal with this one. What if we consider a listed potential risk to be a benefit? How could this be reflected in response? E.g., item 17D, I might have to provide a valid email address in order to register a domain name. And Lisa's responded on the chat saying put it down as another benefit. So that's that one closed. Stephanie, do you want to comment on the privacy stuff since you're our resident privacy person?
Thanks, Michele. Well, what kind of comment do you want, Michele?
I want an honest one, dear. I would never try to put words in your mouth.
I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have. Because, you know, it's a little hard to comment in a void. We're attempting to up the ante a bit in terms of privacy protection with this system, understanding that it is not going to be easy to do anything automatically in a system. As Carlton, I think, explained very well, this is complex. Jurisdiction is complex. An individual is entitled to certain types of data protection depending on where they live and where they're, you know, where they're registering, and building an engine to actually enforce that is a tall order. But right at the moment, everything falls on the plate of the registrars, so this would help.
Stephanie, Lisa has a question for you on the Adobe chat. She's asking, what privacy benefit do you see the RDS having for you as a small business owner? So, you know, you're a small business owner, Stephanie. How would you see it benefiting you?
Okay. In terms of being a small business, this is one of the very complex matters that the RDS is not going to be able to easily solve. Depending on which country you're in, which jurisdiction, small business is could be regulated at the municipal level. It could be regulated at the province or state level. State in the sense of a jurisdiction inside a country, or it can be regulated at the national level. We would have quite a time building an engine that reflected all of that. And there are different criteria for whether or not you're a business or whether you're an individual. So a small business could be incorporated They could be just what we call a sole proprietor here in Canada. And because we see the Internet as the engine of growth and many economies going away from single job kinds of economies to all kinds of people doing all kinds of things enabled by the Internet, it's going to be difficult to predict. That's one of the reasons, and I think Carlton mentioned this, you self-identify. If you are someone who is doing business on the Internet and you really want it to be clear that you're in business, you can identify as a business and not more or less forsake your data protection. If, on the other hand, you're entitled to data protection as an individual and nothing in your own regulation requires you to indicate you are otherwise, for the purposes of that distinction between being a legal person, a business, or an individual, then you can so select. The RDS can enforce every law in the realm, but we're trying to make it a little more flexible here and allow people to self-identify, and that automatically then sorts what data gets released. Did that help at all?
Thanks, Stephanie. That's very helpful. One of the things, this is Michele speaking for the transcript, one of the things that several of us have been kind of harping on about, hammering on, for since we started on this journey with the EWG, is that, you know, ICANN needs to do a better job of dealing with privacy issues. And I think, you know, some of us have been quite vocal advocates for that. So just moving on then to the next section, which is reducing risk, increasing benefit. And I believe we're handing over here to Fabrizio. Fabrizio, over to you.
Thank you, Michele. So as the slide is appropriately titled, Reducing Risk and Increasing Benefits, is what we're really trying to do here, both in the ecosystem but through the survey, to help reduce risk and increase benefits in our proposal. So we thought it'd be helpful to actually go through a screenshot here that shows some of the sample questions and really draw your attention to these last three columns for you to please consider these columns, and really to walk you through a way of thinking about these questions so that you can see kind of what we're trying to get at. As I went through the survey as one of the guinea pigs, a few questions in, I found myself realizing that really what was happening was I was being funneled through by broad stroke categories and then funneling down to a more narrow what's really going to happen and what matters to me. So if you look at the questions, they're really listed in a funnel format of the first column, kind of what might potentially impact you. And then from there, you're asked to narrow down to, of those, what would be two of the most impactful, and then of those, what is most likely to happen? And then you obviously have this, what's new to the RDS that would impact you. But if you notice, when you think of it in this funneling way, it really is helpful to outline, and you'll see when we get to the next slide, it's really helpful to highlight what is intolerable risk versus what's broadly acceptable. And something to remember on all of this is throughout the survey, we constantly ask the question of other. What are other risks or benefits that you see that we possibly didn't think of so that we can start trying to rank those? So we can go to the next slide, please. So this next slide provides an example of a risk matrix. This isn't exactly what we will use, but it's a simple form to show how a risk matrix works. Let's take the question from the prior slide. Potential security and privacy risks. A, my registration data might be more vulnerable to external attack. If everybody were to put, yes, that might impact me, but then in going through and running down the funnel and narrowing down, nobody then picks that this is one of the two most impactful and one of the two most likely to happen to me, then that question or that factor goes down the list of broadly acceptable risk, monitor to see if you need to further reduce that risk if practicable. But should, in that same scenario, if everybody picked might impact you, it is one of the two most impactful to me, and it is one of the two things that I think is most likely to occur, obviously that factor shoots up to the intolerable risk level that needs immediate action. So you can see that if we're applying this type of matrix to your questions, ultimately what we hope to be able to identify are the intolerable risks that will make a direct impact on what models we propose going forward. One of the questions, for example, that we get a lot around if you had a centralized system, if everybody said, this is likely to impact me, it's most impactful, and it's likely to happen that a centralized system does a certain thing, then that might inform us that we either need to change how the centralized system works or abandon a centralized system, for example. So next slide. So this is all to say that we need you to tell us what you think. You've heard several of us say throughout this presentation that we've put a lot of work into this, and we really do believe we bring some good expertise and knowledge, but that knowledge and that expertise only goes as far as who's been in the room thus far, and luckily up till now you guys have, the community in general has been giving us input, but the more input we get, the more expertise we get from the community, the better this proposal becomes. So what we're really wanting to know from all of you are, with regard to your top risks, are they unavoidable? Are some that are acceptable? Are some of your top risks, are we able to shift those or reduce those by changing the proposal? And ultimately, it'd be great to find out if there are some risks, but that you feel that are tolerable, considering some of the trade-offs and benefits that you might gain from a system. So we have a link here to the survey. I believe it's throughout the website as well. But again, please tell us what you think. That's the whole point of this exercise, in particular this survey. Do you have any questions, or are we just moving to next steps?
Steve Metalitz has a query about the previous slide. I'm just going to scroll back up for a couple of slides back. I think it's with the new with RDS. He's asking, please explain purpose of far right-hand column. Aren't all the benefits risks listed intended to be those that are new or at least significantly changed in RDS as compared to status quo?
Let's see, Lisa's already answering.
Yeah, this is Lisa. Okay. I'll just say for a moment that, just for example, the first one on here, registration data might be vulnerable to attack. I guess the key word there is more, if you believe that the RDS increases the risk. But, of course, we know that data today is already vulnerable to attack. And I think if you look at some of the risks and benefits that are listed and think about it, you'll find that they do already exist today. But in particular, for those of you who tell us other risks and other benefits, you may also find that they exist today once you think about it, and it's helpful for us to realize where risks are maybe common but increased, or benefits are maybe common but increased.
Thank you, Lisa. And then another question from Steve is, how will responses in the last column be used in the risk matrix?
Stephanie, do you want to jump in on his prior question? Maybe, I don't know if you can cover this one as well.
Well, I think so, because, I mean, the ones in the last column, in response to Steve's previous question, obviously if everything we've done has not helped to mitigate your current giant risk, we need to hear about that, right? So the distinction, I don't think when we do the final rating of the risk here, it's going to be looked at as, okay, after RDS, what are our risks? we're encouraging you to think of new ones that we are obviously trying in the development of the RDS to respond to current risks and problems and issues. If we haven't done that, we need to hear about it because it's an end state. What does it look like under the new system that we'll be evaluating? I think that's the important thing. What are you left with at the end of this? Does that help?
Thanks, Stephanie. I think that's very helpful. Fabrizio, do you want to continue, or are you done?
I think I am done, and I was going to hand over to Margie for conclusion and next steps, unless people have any other questions. So having seen none, Margie?
Sure. This is Margie. The next steps related to the survey, obviously we would like as many people as possible to respond by May 15th. We've already received a significant number of responses, so we're very excited about the interest in the survey. If you haven't had all your questions answered and want to learn more about the RDS, we have an introductory video on the link in the slide deck where you can hear more about just the RDS system. We also have a longer, you can listen to the recording of this webinar and the webinar we had earlier that will be posted. And then there's also a link to the initial report and the status update report, as well as some FAQs that were put together when we first did our initial report. All of this input is to be carefully considered by the expert working group as it refines the recommendations. The goal here is to produce the final report for delivery to the ICANN board in June this year. So by the ICANN London meeting, the final report will be ready, and it is hoped that that report will be accepted by the board and then serves to be the basis of an ongoing policy development process in the GNSO. And so that's the hope with once the work of the expert working group is concluded in June. And then we do have, as I mentioned, we do have the materials on the slide. And I believe this will conclude our webinar. The slides, the recording, and the transcript will be available on the announcement page shortly after this webinar. And again, please participate in the survey. It's your chance to tell the expert working group about the risks and benefits of how this RDS might impact you. Again, the closing date is May 15th. And you can also send input to the expert working group at their email address at input-to-ewg@icann.org. Thank you so much for your participation in this webinar.